Let's talk, all right? Let's talk. We got some, some behavior problems to talk about with your employment.
Yeah, I do apologize.
Yeah, all right.
Is HR here? Are we good?
How about your outfit?
Listen. So this is the deal. First off, you have to be pretty confident to wear white joggers on stage. So
sun yellow shirt.
This is the first outfit that I think since I've been 7 years old that I have worn. It had nothing to do with purchasing or didn't pick it out.
Somebody else did that too.
Yeah, so my mom used to do it, and then Jessica did this one. So I'm about it.
I love it.
I'm about it.
And I love it because it is positive, it's optimistic, it's bold, and that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about Jesus, yes.
Jesus. Okay, cool.
Yeah, you got the beard, but let's not go that far. We're talking about Jesus reimagining the future. And a lot of times, and during the time of Jesus, there was a very sort of depressed thinking about the future. They didn't have anything. They were poor. They were oppressed. The Roman government had basically enslaved them. They were trapped in poverty. They were overtaxed. They had no freedoms, no rights, nothing. And so Jesus comes into this very depressed and frankly, angry kind of environment that they were victims of injustice. And they were losing their hope, absolutely losing their hope. And Jesus comes and he says, I'm preaching the good news of a kingdom that is coming, and blew their mind. And so today we're going to talk about the good news that Jesus preached and practiced. And he says, there are better days ahead. And the cool thing about this message is it's really one of the, actually, probably the single strangest thing about Rancho Church. As I've heard from people who grew up in church, it's like, this place, you think the world's getting better? You think the kingdom of heaven is coming to earth? You're not saying this is all done end times in a half an hour? It's like, you've got a positive, optimistic vision of the future? Yes, it comes from Jesus. And then we get to celebrate that through the preaching of the word, but you guys here, this band, incredible, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really cool.
The guy's killing, absolutely.
I was telling the teams the other day that I love just being here on Sunday and watching what you guys do, watching your smiles, watching you celebrate, loving each other, loving God. Where does that come from?
Well, I think, what's the opposite? I mean, what's the other choice? I mean, you know, God, you're so good and we're all sad, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it is the good news. Once you grab hold of that good news of Jesus Christ and knowing that it's not all doom and gloom and you better do this, or there's a freedom that comes with that. And there's a freedom that comes with that. Steve has said before, and maybe you, I don't know, but Steve.
If you're as good as me.
Yeah, okay, cool. As I think Steve has said before, but this whole idea of, man, it is so freeing to not have to judge everybody else.
Yeah.
It's so freeing to be like, it's cool. What you're doing is cool. What I'm doing is cool. That's all cool, you know. Because you have that freedom. And I know that a lot of us have grown up in that kind of more of a strict background in church. And I know, Alex, we were talking, Grammy-nominated jazz musician Alex Lavelle. As I now only introduce him. We were talking a little bit before this about that kind of growing up in that stricter background. You have a story with that.
Yeah, like I grew up for pretty much the first 15 years of my life in a more strict religious background where their form of worship was more, you know, penitent, more, sit there and pretty much don't say anything, just listen to the message and, you know, then get up after the service is over. So what I really love about Rancho is that it's pretty much the exact opposite, which is that I can worship on stage with this incredible band, I can jump around and I can play piano as much as I want, which is, I love that. And it works into the vision of, you know, a future of optimism rather than, you know, having this experience of just sitting there and not really doing anything to worship. I can get up, I can dance, I can sing if I want, and it's great.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Well, and I've heard that from many of the band members as well, that it's just so much fun to have that freedom, right? Where you don't, as you said, live under this kind of brooding judgment. We're free from judgment. We're free from guilt. We're free from shame. That means we can actually enjoy our relationship with God. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You can smile about your relationship with God.
Yeah, there's so many people, too, that will say, you need to focus more on hell. You know, you need to teach more on hell.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need directions to the place I'm not going.
Right.
I don't even know about that. And what good is it, you know, like, do you want to, this is the joy of the Lord. Don't you want to spend eternity with me? Like, no, you
really.
Are mean. Yeah. You are all very rude every time I'm around you. So it's so different to be able to kind of cast that aside and to say, you know, all of this I'm very thankful for. As we talked about, I grew up very Old Testament. I love the Old Testament.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everything about just love the Old Testament. Grew up with all of those stories. The problem is, once I started grasping hold of some of the concepts in the New Testament that Jesus was kind of teaching on, it was hard for me to accept all of the New Testament. I mean, I could say that I accepted it, but the wrestling that was going on, there was almost a moment of walking away from faith. because I started to realize that the more I did right and the more I nailed and the more I did exactly what I was supposed to do, the worse I treated people. I was here, I was elite, I was, you know, the best, and then everybody else was the peasants, you know, and don't talk to me because God will strike you dead, if you, you know, because he's on my side, you know. And I think someone hand me a book, Destined to Reign by Joseph Prince, and that was the beginning of a grace awakening for me to actually see the Old Testament, love the Old Testament, and then be able to embrace the grace of Jesus Christ in the New Testament, and then see, wow, this grace is extending from the very beginning of this whole story.
And we talk about that quite a bit here. And we want to properly read the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament is about the Old Covenant, and the Old Covenant was conditional, which meant to this nation, if you obey these rules that I give you, you're going to prosper as a nation. It's pretty simple. If the nation lives by law and order, you're going to be successful. If you don't, you're not going to be successful. And in the end, Israel was not successful obeying those laws. All of those laws, all those rules, if you carry that forward into our relationship with God, you're doomed, right? You live that, I live that. I lived thinking that I had to obey God's pretty much old covenant rules in order to be blessed by him, in order for him to answer my prayers, and that's a tough spot to be. And like you, you're either living in guilt because you're not doing it, or if you do it for half an hour, you're judging the rest of the world for not doing it. What the New Testament through Jesus brings is a new covenant that's unconditional. It's not an if. There is no if. Jesus just says, I'm blessing this world, I'm bringing the forgiveness of heaven, I'm bringing a new life to you, and I'm bringing, and this is the point today, I'm bringing a new life to this world. There's an optimistic vision of the future that Jesus preaches, that Jesus practices, that we're going to talk about today. And for a lot of people, they can't get their heads around it. They've been taught so often their entire religious life, things are getting worse, the end is near, you know, just kind of get in a little holy cluster while the rest of the world burns. That's so common in so many people's minds that all that needs to be reimagined through Jesus.
If you continue to think that way, this is all going to hell in a handbasket and I'm going up here and this is all doomed, you treat everything so much worse. What's the point in doing a good thing here? Because it's all going to burn anyway. But when you change that, you say, wait a minute, my mission, and what an awesome mission it is that God has given me, is to spread the love and joy and peace of heaven on earth. And now my purpose in life is so much more full. I'm so much more excited about it because I have a purpose. I have a calling to spread that love. And as we say in the worship team a lot, it's you're able to be a part of eternity change. And that is huge. That is so big and such a high calling. And it's fun to do.
It's a ton of fun. It's great. And you're going to sing about this. You're going to sing a song from Josh Garrels. I did a little looking into Josh. I call him Josh because that's his name.
First name basis.
Yes. He was into punk rock, which I'm kind of a fan of. He's into East Coast hip hop, a little bit of a fan of. But then he had this experience with the Lord in his 20s, and he started writing more folksy songs. And so if you look at Josh Garrels right now, a lot of folksy song, lots of words.
So many words.
So many words. So many syllables are going to come out of your face.
Oh my gosh. I hope I get them not on the wrong emphasis. You know?
That's right. Yeah. And then you're going to actually rap at the end of the service too. So you're going to need some days off.
Time
to have a new baby.
A new baby. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, perfect. This song is a cool song because it embraces the real kind of pain and suffering of our experience, which is real. There's really things going on here that hurt. Loss and grief and pain. But there's this line in there that says, you know, cheer up, my brothers, live in the sunshine. Yeah. And I love that. So we're still holding the reality of what we're feeling. Yes. If we're feeling loss, feel loss. But underneath that is a hope and a joy and a pleasure that the kingdom of heaven is coming to earth right here and right now. But as we've said, underneath that is a true pleasure and a true joy that there are better days ahead, not just for us, but for this world. That things are getting better. That Jesus talked about a kingdom of heaven coming to earth, and that if we love each other and share grace with each other and mercy and kindness with each other, this place, right here, right now, will look more like heaven. And I know a lot of people just cannot get their heads around that. They cannot believe that because we've been told getting worse, doom and gloom, end is near for so long. We've lost hope that things can get better right here and right now. And that was true during the time of Christ. I mean, during the time of Jesus, there was very little hope because they had endured 1,000 years of decline. I mean, can you imagine a nation experiencing 1,000 years of decline? They had their high point around 1,000 BC, and then just event after event after event tore their country apart to the time of Christ. And at the time of Christ, there were two small Hebrew tribes left, invaded by the Roman government, overtaxed, trapped in poverty, no freedom, no voice, no power, completely abused. That was the culture during the time of Jesus. Very little hope of things getting better. So people either sunk into sort of this sad depression, or they were enraged with anger because things were so unjust. And it's understandable. It's more understandable when you realize that the Hebrew people, their entire hope was based on one word, a very important word that's a key to understanding both the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's the word kingdom. Kingdom. If we're going to understand the Bible, we have to understand the word kingdom. We have to understand how they perceived kingdom in the Old Testament and how Jesus perceived kingdom or reimagined kingdom in the New Testament. During the time of Daniel, these two remaining tribes were in exile. They were basically treated as slaves in the Babylonian with the Babylonian people. They were away from their home country in a foreign land, foreign language, foreign customs. They were completely out of sorts. And yet God gives them a promise about kingdom in Daniel chapter 7. Get this. Then at some day, the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be given to the holy people of the Most High, the Hebrews. This was a promise in the middle of their captivity, probably the worst time in Hebrew history. God says, all of the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms of the world will be given to you, Hebrews. His kingdom will last forever, and all the rulers will serve and obey him. So in their mind, they're thinking, you know what? Not only are we going to get back to the glory days of King Solomon, where the borders were as large as they had ever been, but we might even rule over the whole world. I mean, this is their idea of kingdom. But it didn't go well. It didn't go well. I think if we properly read the Old Testament, we would understand that we're reading a tragedy here, right? The Old Testament starts with the origin stories of the nation of Israel. Then God calls the patriarchs to establish a nation. They are essentially birthed as a nation in the womb of slavery for 400 years. They're released from slavery as nomadic people, and they have this law that God gave them. This is how you are to exist as a civil country, so you don't ruin each other and you're not subject to attack. And so they kind of obey the law at times. They take the land. They don't obey the law at times. Sometimes they're successful. Sometimes they're not. Let me give you a brief history here. At the height of their power, this is about 950 BC, they had these borders. The borders were as broad as they have ever been under King Solomon. The red area, they tightly controlled. The orange area, they pretty much controlled. The dark yellowish areas, they had some relationship with. That was the largest the kingdom of Israel has ever been. To put in perspective how big that is globally, this next map here will show you a little tiny dot where modern-day Israel is. That's generously sized, let me put it that way. The biggest the nation of Israel has ever been is roughly about a quarter of the size of that pink dot there. To put it in perspective, the nation of Israel's largest borders are about the size of Riverside County, the county that we live in. To put it another way, from the Mexican border to Los Angeles, from the ocean to Temecula, California, that's the largest the borders of Israel have ever been in their history. From there, it gets worse. In 721, Assyria wiped out the 10 northern tribes, just gone. Two tribes remain. In 586, Babylon conquers the kingdom of Judah, the last two tribes. They take him into exile, where we've read the Daniel account. In 63 BC, 63 years before the birth of Christ, the Romans invaded after the Persians and the Greeks have also invaded. This was a sad, declining country. And that's how the Old Testament ends. The promise of kingdom, but a sad, declining country to end the Old Testament. If you were to read the Old Testament cover to cover, you would close the book and you'd probably have a tear in your eye. This is a sad story. So much hope of kingdom, yet it never came about. Never came about. Then Jesus shows up. Here is this sad and depressed, sometimes angry country, just experiencing hope lost. Hope lost. Promise of kingdom, never experiencing kingdom, probably among the worst times in their history. Jesus comes along and this is what he says. Jesus traveled throughout the region of Galilee, this very poor, uneducated region, teaching in the synagogues and announcing, get this, the good news about the kingdom. So in that context, when you have Jesus preaching good news about a kingdom in a deeply impoverished, oppressed region of Galilee, how do you think that went over? He also healed every kind of disease and illness. This got people's attention. Here you have the preaching of the good news of kingdom, which means don't lose hope. People of Israel, don't lose hope. Yes, you have nothing going for you. Yes, it seems as though this promise of kingdom is nowhere, and you are sad, you are depressed, or you are angry. Jesus says, there is a kingdom coming. And then he proved the power of his message by healing disease and illness. So they knew he was from God, so his message must be from God. And he sparked a little bit of hope about kingdom, and they flocked to Jesus by the thousands. By the thousands. And then Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount, and he says, not only is this a kingdom I'm announcing, this is a kingdom that you can participate in. And so he says, when you pray, pray this way, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now Jesus starts to define this kingdom. He starts to define the kingdom. He says to his followers, when you pray, pray God, will your kingdom come, will your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. He starts defining the kingdom. The kingdom of God is the will of God on earth. Jesus is reimagining what kingdom is all about. Jesus isn't talking about a kingdom of military might. He's not talking about a kingdom of government. He's not talking about a kingdom of politics. He's not talking about a kingdom of human rule. He just defined kingdom as the will of God being done on earth. The kingdom of God is the will of God on earth. Not military, not government, not politics. Jesus puts a fine point on this when he's talking to Pontius Pilate. You might know the story, right? He's arrested. The crowds are shouting, crucify him. Pontius Pilate does not want the city to erupt in riots. And so he's standing before Jesus, and he says, listen, Jesus, this is a paraphrase out of John 8. He says, the whole crowd here is saying you're a king. Pontius Pilate's the governor, the Roman governor in charge of the whole region. So if Jesus is saying he's a king, he's a threat to Rome, he has to die. That was just the deal. So Pilate says to Jesus, are you a king? Jesus says this, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. He's really clear. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders, but my kingdom is not of this world. About as clear as it gets. It's as clear as it gets. Jesus essentially says to Pilate, I'm no threat to you. I'm no threat to Rome. Yeah, I'm a king over a kingdom, but it's not of this world. It's an invisible kingdom. And Pilate hears from Jesus, knows about the ministry of Jesus, washes his hands. I find no fault in this man. He's free to go. Pilate knew the kingdom of heaven through Jesus had nothing to do with military, government, or politics. It was a spiritual, internal kingdom. It's about the will of God being done on earth. The reason why Jesus ended up being crucified is because the city would have erupted in a riot if Pilate didn't have him killed, and so he did what he had to do as a government official, and Jesus was put to death. So what is the will of God? If the kingdom of heaven is the will of God on earth, what is the will of God? I think Jesus answers that very clearly as well. Just a few hours before his crucifixion, he is praying in anguish in the Garden of Gethsemane. He knows he's facing torture. He knows he's facing the cross. He knows he's facing death. Jesus is the fullness of humanity and the fullness of divinity, and the fullness of his humanity was screaming to God, take this cup of suffering from me. The fullness of the humanity of Jesus did not want to suffer, did not want to endure torture, did not want to endure the cross and death. And so he prayed. He went farther in the garden, bowed with his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done. To me, this is the greatest definition of the will of God in the entire Bible. I had to read this several times to kind of even see it myself. This is the will of God. Jesus says, as a human being, I don't want to suffer. As a human being, I don't want to experience pain. As a human being, I don't want to suffer loss. I don't want to fear. I don't want to be in anguish. As a human being, he's saying, I don't want to suffer. But God, it's not about my will as a human being. It's about me as a human being submitting myself to your will. And God, through Jesus, says, my will is about giving yourself to benefit others. That's what Jesus did here. He followed the will of God and he gave himself to benefit others. Jesus followed the will of God and he laid his life down as the full expression of God's love for us. He gave everything, the fullness of divinity gave everything, including his own comfort, his rights, his privilege, his life, to bring forgiveness to this world freely. Jesus did the will of God. He gave himself to benefit others. The will of God is to give ourselves to benefit others. Follow the logic. If the kingdom of heaven, as Jesus told us to pray in Matthew 6, is about the will of God coming to earth, and as Jesus himself modeled, the will of God is to sacrifice ourselves to benefit others, that's how we can participate in bringing heaven to earth. The more selfless we are, the more we're dedicated to benefit others, just simply following Jesus in that, the more heaven comes to earth. But I have to spend just a couple of minutes, I'm not going to belabor this point, and I hope I'm not overstating this. I really try to avoid overstating things, at least from here. Christianity itself is making a choice right now. Christianity as a religion, as a faith movement, especially in the West, is making a choice right now. Is Christianity as a movement going to align itself with politics to pursue political power, governmental power, to protect ourselves? Or is Christianity as a movement, as a religion, going to follow the will of God and the example of Jesus and say, no, my life is going to be about advancing the kingdom of heaven on earth, bringing the will of God to earth, and I'm going to follow Jesus and I'm going to sacrifice, I'm going to give of myself to benefit the world around me. We have a choice to make because there is a whole bunch of millions and millions and millions using the name of Christ and Christianity as a religion to tie it to a political movement, to get political power, governmental power, to benefit ourselves, my rights, my freedoms. That's the language of a large part of the Christian movement. Protect my rights, protect my freedoms, protect my power, protect my voice. Name of God, political party, candidates, and that's how we're going to do it. I'm going to be clear. It's wrong. It is exactly what was happening during the time of Jesus, and Jesus had to reimagine the whole idea of kingdom. It's not of this world. It's not about me. Jesus says, the will of God is to give of myself to benefit the world around me. I've got to be honest with you. One of my favorite parts of our service on Sunday is Wagar. I was very pleased to be on that stage for the first time, tear to my eye, because we get to celebrate the things that we're doing to benefit other people. Whether it's something as simple as backpacks or feeding people in the farm, giving a little bit of blood. I mean, this is the obsession of our church. And I'm not saying we have it all together at all. We are imperfectly striving to build a new kind of kingdom, not of politics, not of government, not of power, not of self, not of protection, not of my rights and my privilege. But how can I give myself away? How can Rancho give itself away to benefit the world around us? That's the kingdom of heaven. That's advancing the cause of Christ. That's the will of God. And we see some things even in the teaching of Jesus about the kingdom of heaven that we're completely reimagining what God's plans are for this world. And I'm telling you, it is the most optimistic, powerfully exciting vision going forward. It's an exciting vision that the world is going to get better, that heaven is coming to earth, it will be rooted on the earth. And so he tells these kingdom parables. Let me just give you a couple of them. These are the kingdom of heaven is like parables. There's about a dozen of them. I'll just tell you about a couple of them. The kingdom of heaven grows incredibly. This is the vision of Jesus as he's reimagining all that this world could be. The kingdom of heaven is the will of God on earth. The will of God is to give of ourselves to benefit others. Jesus says that is going to grow incredibly. So he tells this very confusing and, if I may say, bizarre little story about the mustard seed. You know what a mustard plant is? You got them in your yard. They're these annoying weeds, right? They grow about that big overnight. There's these little yellow flowers. Very popular in Southern California. It should be the Southern California flower. They're also very popular in Israel. By popular, I just mean they're everywhere. Weeds are everywhere. And so Jesus tells the story that the kingdom of heaven is like the mustard seed, these little annoying weeds. Listen to what he says. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed planted in a field. I don't know who would plant them in a field. It's the smallest of all seeds, but it becomes the largest of garden plants. All right, you can kind of get your head around that. If you happen to plant a mustard seed weed in your garden, it will become very tall, probably taller than any garden plant. But then listen to what Jesus says. It grows into a tree. Jesus, it doesn't grow into a tree. And birds come and make their nests in its branches. Have you ever had a mustard weed have a nest in it with birds? It doesn't happen. This is typical Jesus. He's telling a story. It's hyperbole at least. I don't even know what to call it. It's kind of this outrageous story that says a mustard seed will grow into a huge tree where people will find shade and birds will nest. Not going to happen. Jesus says exactly. The growth of the kingdom of heaven is so unnatural and so ridiculous, nobody would believe it. Do you realize, right here, right now, today on this very planet Earth, 1/3 of the population, over 2 billion human beings, follow a man that lived 2,000 years ago, uneducated, peasant, in hillbilly region of Galilee, from a squatter's village, didn't even have their own property, a squatter's village, who was a roaming preacher who lived off donations, who was executed as a traitor. That's who 1/3 of this world follows. You talk about the smallest of seeds, that is Jesus. The tiniest, most insignificant human being by resume is Jesus. Yet 1/3 of the world follows him, and the other 2/3 of the world admire him. That's a mustard seed growing into a tree. The kingdom of heaven grows incredibly. The kingdom of heaven is also wide open. In these kingdom parables, Jesus makes it very clear the kingdom of heaven is wide open. He tells a story, one of my favorites in the Bible, of a master of an estate who invites the elite to a party. And during the time of Christ, the Jews, especially the religious Jews, would consider themselves the elite of the elite. God loves us, we're God's chosen people. And they say, no, we don't want to come. So he says to his servants, the wedding feast is ready, and the guests I invited aren't worthy of the honor. So servants, go out to the street corners and invite everyone you see. So the servants brought in everyone they could find, good and bad alike, and the banquet hall was filled with guests. The kingdom of heaven is wide open. God went to the Jews first, very clear. He went to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, built a great nation to start with Israel so that through Israel, the entire world will be welcomed, freely welcomed by God's grace into the kingdom of heaven to enjoy him and his grace and his love and his mercy and his forgiveness now and forever and to build a whole new world on earth called the kingdom of heaven. And it is wide open, everyone, as it says, the good and the bad. You follow the life of Jesus. He's with the sick and the sinner. He's with those who were cursed. He's with those who were condemned. He's with those who were ostracized by the religious people. He's with those who are poor and grieving and lonely. That's who he's with. He's with people who were rejected by the religious elites. And so what does it mean to build the kingdom of heaven on earth? What does it mean to do the will of God on earth? It means to recognize that this kingdom is growing. There's an optimistic vision of the future, but one of the reasons why it grows is because the doors are always open. The doors of our heart are always open. The doors of our family are always open. The doors of our churches are always open to anyone. There are no conditions. There are no behavior standards of who can come in and who can come out. We don't have moral codes and doctrinal codes to keep people out or to praise those who are in. Wide open doors. Wide open doors. The kingdom of heaven is wide open. And finally, the kingdom of heaven is a party. Jesus is always talking about partying, or he's always partying. I mean, I'm not kidding. When he talks about kingdom parables, he's talking about a woman who loses a coin finds it, parties. A man who loses a sheep finds it, parties. A father who loses a son finds him and parties. He gives another parable, the hidden treasure and a very similar one, a found pearl. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field. In his excitement, he hid it again and sold everything he owned to get money to buy the whole field. He found a treasure. The treasure is the kingdom of heaven, and he is stoked. He's excited. You're kidding. This is the greatest thing. And he celebrates. He celebrates. Story after story of Jesus is a celebration. And if he's not telling a story about celebration, he's probably in the house of somebody at a party. In fact, at the end of Jesus' ministry, he was known as a drunkard, a glutton, and a friend of sinners. That's Jesus' reputation. You follow somebody whose reputation was a drunkard, a glutton, and a friend of sinners, because he's always in people's houses enjoying people, just being around people. And all the stiff religious leaders are like, you are a sinner, you're of the devil, you're with people, and you're having fun, and you're smiling. God forbid you're smiling. Enjoying his heavenly Father and enjoying each other, celebrating life. The kingdom of heaven is a party. It's an exciting treasure. And as the story goes, you sell everything to buy the entire field around this treasure, meaning your old life is almost considered to be worthless compared to the life that you now enjoy in the love of God, the grace of God, the forgiveness of God freely given to you and now being shared with the entire world. It's incredible. The kingdom of heaven is a party. Now let's look at Christianity in America. I'm not going to belabor this. Just a question. Does it look like a party? Or is it pretty angry and finger-pointing and judgy? I don't know. Is it wide open? Are the doors wide open? Anybody, just come on in. And we're going to talk about God's grace and celebrate it and tell you you're forgiven and you're a child of God, perfect in his eyes, a son or daughter, perfect in the eyes of God. Believe that and live in the pleasure of that, right? Just have some thinking to do. Christians, we follow Jesus. Jesus has an optimistic vision of the future, the kingdom of heaven fully established on earth. We get to build that. We get to build the kingdom of heaven on earth by being selfless and kind, by smiling, being gracious, not moral police and political police and all angry-eyed and judgy, but just come here. Let me tell you about the grace of God and Jesus Christ. We celebrate here, we love here, we laugh here, right? We embrace each other here. If you fail, we're gonna walk with you and pick you up, dust you off a little bit and say, hey, let's do something better next time. It's a place of grace, a place of kindness. That's what I would love to see of Rancho Church, and I see it at Rancho Church. We get to be just a little bit of light, establishing the kingdom of heaven here. It's a party, doors are wide open, and let's get this place growing in the name of Jesus, not the church, the kingdom of heaven. Growing, spreading to all the world. We're going to end in a party song. It's a party song. Evan has Andrew W.K. pants, and so we're going to party. We're going to party. Party hard. You laughed more than the last service, which means you're super cool. Let this song move you, not just in your heart. It's a celebration song. If you've never moved your booty in church, this would be a good time to start. I mean, seriously. Smile. Let's practice. Smile. Yeah, okay, you're going to need some more. Smile. The kingdom of heaven is here. It is coming. It's through love, grace, and mercy. And we get to shape this world around us. Let's have fun together, all right? Let's stand and celebrate.